Welcome everyone to Yachting International Radio. You're with Corinne from the Crew Coach, and today we're speaking about having difficult conversations. Welcome, Louise from Louise Davis Consulting. Lovely to have you back. You just ran a brilliant masterclass that was very popular. We had attendees from yacht management companies to crew, captains, chief stewardesses, the whole lot. So it's a very much needed conversation, I think. It's to learn how to have difficult conversations.
Yeah. Thank you. And thank you for the welcome. It's delightful to be here. It was a fabulous masterclass. And to your point, difficult conversations are universal. And so I think that whether it's on board, land-based, whatever it is, I work with organizations, land-based organizations, but it's when we're working with people, there's always going to be difficult situations, conversations to be had.
So I would love to hear real life examples, Louise. I don't know. I'm pretty sure you'd have a big list of case studies where you had to navigate around those difficult conversations. So what would you say the most popular type of conversation that people tend to avoid?
I think, let me give you some statistics before I jump into that, because I think there's a range of different topics. But the thing that has come through is that over, and this was research done through Bravely, an organization, and they were researching land-based organizations. But the interesting thing here is that over 70% of employees are avoiding conversations with their boss, their direct report peers, at people just keeping their head down on those difficult conversations. Now, they can be anything from obnoxious behaviours. It could be poor performance or expectations not being met. There's a particular task that was given and that has not been met. It can be around things like breaches of policy or safety, any of those sorts of different things. It can come down to even things like, and this is a big one as well, which is like personal hygiene. Funnily enough, people find that really difficult around, what do I say about their body odor or their breath? And it's, they'll talk to other people, but they won't actually talk to the individual. And that just makes it even worse. So there's a range of things. Things like giving feedback to someone. And I think often what can be challenging is particularly if someone who's previously been a crew member and has now moved into a leadership role, and now they need to be able to give feedback to their mate, their friend, and the context gets really blurry for people. And there's a range of difficult situations that can arise. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think why people avoid these conversations, it's largely to, well, their fear around how people are actually going to respond to what they have to say. So they would rather avoid it. And we both know that if you avoid things, they're going to just fester and become a lot more complicated and time-consuming and stressful to resolve. So that is why we need to learn these skills on how to have these conversations so that you can reduce the, I would say, mental load for yourself and be effective in your role.
I absolutely agree with that. My confession always when I'm working with groups with clients around difficult conversations is I don't like them either, because they're around uncomfortable topics often for the individual. And for me, I'm like, it's all just get along. Like I'm all for harmony. But the reality is that when we're working with people, there's always going to be some degree of conflict that happens. And that is normal. That's the thing that we have to appreciate, is that if to be a part of any functioning team, debate and disagreement are a key part of that. If you avoid those conversations, then what happens is that ability to work tightly as a team, a cohesive team, starts to get fractured. And to your point, what happens is that mental load that goes on, we start, I call it, it's like mental gymnastics. Sometimes I think I'm a gold medalist with the conversation going on in my head. And it's, no, let's bring it back. Because the difference for me now, when I still don't like difficult conversations, but the thing is, I know how to do them. And so what happens is, to your point around the festering that can go on, if I put it off for too long, what happens is that the conversation, just that issue, what was initially a small niggling issue that I didn't address at the time, starts to just get bigger in the background. And as much as it's like the elephant in the room that we don't want to talk about, it's one that just is, okay, now it's become a bigger issue. Now it's escalated. And in land-based organisations that I work with, that's where people often wait till they say, now it's a HR issue. And I know that's not necessarily the option that goes on so much in ocean-based situations and in the yachting community as such. So really having the skills and the insights to go, well, how do I start to lead that conversation? How do I take the initiatives? Even if I'm not in a leadership role, but having the initiative to put it on the table and know how to start the conversation. But we actually have to address, the way I talk about it is there's actually two conversations that we need to have. It's the one that's going on in our head, and then the conversation that we need to have with the individual about what it is happening. And that's what we went into much more detail in the masterclass. Yeah.
Yes, and we'll talk about the masterclass in a moment. Yeah. You, however, sparked a memory for me with regards to having a conversation about your personal hygiene. Yeah. So I was working in a prison in Melbourne, and my client was put on my caseload last minute, but he was going to go into isolation. He was at risk of suicide.
Yeah.
So they gave him to me to work with, and we got somewhere, and he was doing really well. He was coming out of his cell. He was going to the library to get books. He was going for walks, and he was engaging in pro-social behaviors. However, he hadn't quite nailed the personal hygiene, and his hair was so long, his nails were long. I wasn't sure if he was brushing his teeth, and I had to have that conversation. And I remember the day where I psyched myself up, and I'm like, Kareem, you're going to say something to him today. And it came to great relief when I met up with him that he had trimmed his nails, he had cut his hair. I'm like, oh, thank God, I don't have to have the conversation. But when you were talking, it made me think, if I'm rather focused on the benefit for him, for me, for him, in relation to having that conversation and not worrying about how is he going to take it, because my internal dialogue was, oh, but he's gone through so much and look how far he's come. And now would this make him feel bad and embarrass him if I had the time to cut his nails? But if I rather positioned it as, well, this is how it's going to make him feel once he's cleaned himself up. He's going to have more confidence. He will be proud of himself, feel that self-respect.
Yeah.
Then the conversation becomes easier.
Yeah. Totally, totally. And it's really interesting about the hygiene issue, because people go, a bit of a snigger about this stuff, body odor, all that sort of stuff. But when I pose that to groups and people have said, oh, yes, I had someone who's had just such bad body odor. And I'm like, so how did you address it as the manager or as a team member? And things like, I put a can of deodorant in their drawer. And I'm like, well, you know, that's not, that doesn't help the issue. That you're not actually having the conversation. And so to your point, it's about understanding what goes on for the individual. I had a situation one time. So I was a training manager for an international cosmetics company. And so I was working with the counter managers, and one of them actually came up to me. So I've been in the onboarding program. I talk about what the hygiene is and the way that you need to present yourself, representing the brand and all that sort of stuff. And then I had at one point someone come to me and she said, I'm in a dilemma. I'm going, she goes, so I have a particular team member who comes in, she works at casual hours and she works on our high traffic period times for late night shopping. And it's really difficult. And I go, what's the issue? What's going on? She said, she has a wind problem. She has a bit of farting for the, let's talk plain English. But here was the thing that went on. You know, the irony was not lost in the fact that she was spraying fragrance, farting behind the counter. And it was like this whole thing that was going on. And people were like, what do we do? And I said to her, I said, look, have you had a conversation? She goes, I don't know how to address it. And I said, now that you've told me, now I'm involved. Now you've got to think about how that's going to look for her when there's a third party coming in. And this is the thing around the care factor of these types of conversations, because maybe there's information you don't know and you're making a judgment, but maybe there's information that you don't know, and have the conversation. Maybe she doesn't know stuff that she doesn't know the impact of what's going on either. Maybe there's a dietary issue or whatever, but you've got to have the conversation. You've got to care to have that conversation as opposed to put up with it in that sense. And that's the care factor that I think needs to happen in conversations. And hygiene's not always the thing that goes on. Often it can be a change situation. Sometimes it can be that part about giving feedback and thinking that the person is not going to like the feedback, and so therefore the individual giving the feedback is concerned about not being liked. And so that's the part around understanding what's the role that you have and what are the expectations of that role. And if you're in a leadership position, for example, then, or working with that group, you need to be clear around those expectations. Otherwise, when they don't get met, the emotion kicks in and the person, you get disappointed that the emotion, that the expectation hasn't been met. The other person thinks that they've been doing a great job, but it's not getting the feedback because it wasn't given, the instructions weren't given clearly. So there's a lot of stuff there around. And my mantra, as I talk about in the masterclass, is better conversations build better relationships, which build better results. And we've got to keep having the conversation. We've got to keep asking questions.
Mm. Yeah. Louise, I'm curious to know, I don't know if you got the stats on this one, but in terms of, so I know you specialize working with land-based organizations, corporates, how much time, training, resources do they invest in their employees to learn these skills?
Yeah. It's interesting. I think it depends across different organizations. I've done a lot of work in financial services, and there's quite a high level of development that goes on across some of those, almost to a point sometimes where they can take that training for granted. And then other organizations, it depends in terms of where there can be a high investment. I guess if I just summarize across, this is a bigger statement. But there's a lot of investment around in operational and technical expertise. And so I'm often working with a lot of people who have been promoted internally through the business, their organization. So that's because they have great technical skills and operational skills, and there's potential for people development. But often, and this is where I was having a conversation with a potential client yesterday, just in terms of there's this assumption that people learn the people skills, the professional development, people skills. But so it's interesting because I know in some initial research that I've been doing with HR managers across organizations and finding out how much time they spend per month helping managers, and in particular with difficult conversations. And there, in the research that I got, there was probably 64% of people, their HR leaders are having spending more than 12 hours a month having conversations with managers who don't know how to have the conversation. So there's a lot of time that's being invested in that. And it's anywhere up to like 4 weeks in a year for a HR leader that they're spending doing that because the managers don't know how to do it. But this is where it's not just a manager thing, it's a team member piece as well. How do we have better conversations with each other? How do we have those conversations with our managers? So it's some really interesting stats, and it's all of this research and the conversations that I've been having, and you just look at what's going on around wellness, and particularly coming out of pandemic, there's been so much around burnout and well-being, and it's a real issue in terms of keeping people engaged and on board. Otherwise, the turnover that's going on land-based, so I'm sure it has the same impact to some degree in terms of what's going on in the yachting community as well.
Interesting. Just highlighting that figure, 12 hours of productivity is wasted.
Yeah.
And the importance of closing the gap with education.
Mm.
But how so many companies neglect, like it's so obvious to me that these resources are so needed.
It's one of those things where the way I see it is that, and this is the same thing in the yachting community as what I see in terms of organizations that I work with that are highly technical and operational, And so there is an absolute need for that operational excellence that needs to go on. But this is where if that's not balanced with people skill development, then what happens is that it hits the company bottom line ultimately, because what happens is that then, and there's a saying that comes from Gallup organization that really, you know, hasn't changed that much, which is people don't leave organizations, they leave because of their manager. And it's the relationship that goes on in there. But that's because if the people skills aren't happening and team members don't feel safe in an organization, in a team, to be able to have robust conversations, then people will leave. And so that becomes a retention issue. So more money gets put into talent acquisition. Then what happens is that it's how we keep people engaged and happy in their work. And ultimately that has an impact on the customer experience or the client experience, and then yachting it, the guest experience. And you can have all the best equipment in the world. You can have the best, the most fabulous, amazing super yachts in the world. But if you haven't got a good crew running them and delivering a great customer experience, then it's yachting companies have to work that much harder to get good crews and deliver that experience.
Yeah, fascinating, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So this is why we have these conversations, is to create awareness.
Yeah.
Louise, if you could sum up the masterclass and what the participants walked away with in terms of value, what would you say that would be?
So I would say that the masterclass gives people an opportunity to stop and think and to expand your thinking, to give you what we talk about there is giving practical skills around what you can do to implement straight away, if you choose, your mindset. So thinking about how do you start to focus on solutions as opposed to think about the problem of the conversation that you're having. And when you get that in gear, then it's also about being able to think about, because the second part is around confidence. So increasing your confidence. People often talk about, I feel nervous, I feel scared about having the conversation, starting it. And part of that is then about understanding, what do you need to do? Where are you focusing? And also understanding the emotions that are driving that nervousness and using that as data and information to say, what is this about? How do I go find some more information in terms of having the conversation with someone and managing that? And just getting yourself grounded and composed so that you're cool, calm and collected. No one wants to have a conversation with someone who's ranting and upset, emotionally upset, or if they're angry or if they're crying, it just, people feel uncomfortable. So it's how do you get grounded but still be able to communicate how you're feeling? And then when you've got those two pieces, you're able to then talk about the framework. And having a framework for a conversation keeps you on track. Just like having the navigation tools and keeping you on chat, like the chart, so to speak, my old days of growing up sailing, it's digital now. But this is where it's having a framework to keep you on track, to have that conversation. And the biggest part of that is the question around, how do you know you're right? How do you know you're right about, people go in with judgment about conversations. And I think one of the things that people were sharing is that they feel like they would go in and they go a bit too direct in the conversation. And so what happens is it doesn't actually become a conversation, it becomes a telling. And so it actually, conversations go pear-shaped when it's like that. So we talk about how do you open it up? How do you create a healthy, meaningful, productive conversation so that you can progress? Better conversations, better relationships, better results.
What a lovely way to wrap up, Louise. Thank you so much. As I said at the start of this conversation, the masterclass was incredibly popular. And I know the listeners, viewers here today are thinking, how do I access this masterclass? So what I'll do is I'll pop the details underneath this video, and Louise, put your details there as well so that people can find you. I know one of the participants, Vicky from the masterclass, wants to get in touch with you too.
Okay. Yeah. Happy to have a conversation to talk with. So it's great.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.